Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hey, welcome to the program. Thanks for listening in.
Good Tuesday to you. Hope you've had a great day so far. And looking forward to a good discussion ahead this hour. And speaking of looking ahead, you know, we are not that far away from our fall fundraiser here at Faith Radio. We're a listener-supported ministry, and of course, all our family all across the upper Midwest, whether you're listening in Duluth at 90.5 or in the Red River Valley at Faith 1200 or in Sioux Falls 1270 or in Waterloo, Cedar Falls area at 1090, or in Madison at 1190 and in Minneapolis, St. Paul at AM 900. Wherever you're listening around the area, we thank you for tuning in and thank you for your ongoing support of our ministry. We do have our fall fundraiser coming up here beginning September 9th, and if you are willing and able to be a part of our support team, when you give to Faith Radio before September 9th, your name is going to be entered into a drawing for an Apple iPad. And the iPad comes preloaded with the Bible app, the Faith Radio mobile app, devotionals, and other faith-based materials to help you connect faith to life every day. So we've got details online, myfaithradio.com, for more details.
All right, I'll go there right now and sign up.
Yeah, I was going to say, apparently staff are not we're excluded from this opportunity.
That's probably a good thing.
But it's disappointing, but it's a good thing. So anyway, so I hope that you take advantage of it. I guess if you're staff listening, then get back to work.
That's right.
we're looking forward to a good discussion today. This is a topic that generates, well, maybe more heat than light, I think. But we're going to talk today particularly about immigration, the church, and the Bible. In fact, that's the subtitle of the book we're going to reference called Christians at the Border. And it's written by Daniel Carroll. Dr. Carroll is a distinguished professor of Old Testament at Denver Seminary, where he founded IDEAL. It's a Spanish language training program. And he also does adjunct work in Guatemala City. He is bilingual and is author of several books. And we're honored to have him with us today. And he prefers Danny. So, Danny, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So we want to start with what's going on at the border at the moment. And I just was mentioning before the show, looking at an article not too long ago in World Magazine, it talked about the surge of nearly 57,000 unaccompanied minors crossing the southern border. And it just occurred to me that, you know, in our everyday newscast, we get little snippets and sound bites, but I always don't get a lot of detail. I thought that number seems almost unimaginable, but you suggest it's maybe more than that. So how did 57,000-plus kids end up warehoused on the U.S.-Mexican border?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah, the number I've heard actually is about 10,000 more than that, and the U.S. government is projecting several tens of thousands more over the next year. It's pretty complicated. I think what it shows is just how complex the issue is, because what we're seeing with the arrival of all these children is that this is a kind of a global socioeconomic and political problem that's driving these children or their parents to send the children. But what I was hearing, I was just in Guatemala about a month ago and actually talking to people who were involved in this on the Guatemalan side. And what they're thinking is that the rumor has circulated that the U.S. will take these children in. And there is a 2008 law that was passed by President Bush that allows the entry of minors who are seeking asylum from trafficking and violence. So that is, I think that may be the motivating force for them to come and see if that actually can work for them.
And I recall spending some time with a guest not too long ago. We were talking a little bit about this issue, although not particularly the children at the border, but the statement was made, people in Latin America know American history, and they understand maybe more about our laws and policies than many times we do. I guess that's probably true, isn't it? They understand what the opportunities really are.
And what I have found is that, as you say, most Americans don't know the history of U.S. immigration, which is really pretty checkered, nor the complexities of U.S. immigration law, which is even more complicated and antiquated. So sometimes they do know more, and sometimes we get all emotional about things we don't really know much about.
The book that you've written, Christians at the Border, is the second edition. Maybe just a word, and it's from Brazos Press. Maybe why the update? Talk about that first.
Well, if I can throw in a bit of my personal story, I'm half Guatemalan. My mother was Guatemalan, and I spent time there growing up, and I was raised bilingual and bicultural, and I taught there for 15 years before coming. And so when I came to Denver is how I got interested in Hispanic work, and that's where I began to get interested in the whole immigration issue. Actually, I go to an Hispanic church. But what I saw was is that a lot of Christians were talking about immigration without having any kind of biblical foundation or a very minimal one. And so I wrote the book just to kind of put a voice out there. And what happened was basically the first edition sold out. And so we thought about doing a second edition that would update the historical and legal data and actually expand the biblical defense for considering immigration reform.
We want to, that is certainly one of the topics that is much needed today. I mean, it has been, I guess, for many years, some sort of reform and understanding. One of the arguments, Danny, if you'd respond to, it seems like that people say, well, this is all a result of lawlessness. It's an unwillingness to enforce and obey the laws. So, you know, in your book, you say, you know, well, we need to talk about the legal and illegal aspects, but you address other issues before that. Talk about why that's not the first thing we should talk about.
Well, I guess there's a couple of reasons, because one is we need to think about if the laws are good or bad. The nice thing about this country is when laws are bad or we think they're bad, we can change them or tweak them. And that's the case here, actually, if you look at immigration law. And when we start with, let's say, Romans 13, what you get then is, do you have papers, don't have papers, and it's a yes or no answer. And there's really no discussion about the law itself. And so what I try to do in the book is say, we'll get to Romans 13, but let's begin on page 1 of the Bible, because Romans 13 is about page 1,000. And out of those first 1,000 pages inform how we should understand law. And if we are going to reform the law, what would be the moral values and virtues that we would want the law to reflect? And so that's why I do it that way. So I'm not trying to avoid the issue, because you have to get to it. But is asking the question, how do we think about the law? Whether I was listening to your show or to your station just for a few minutes before, and you were talking about same-sex marriage, and we could talk about abortion, and all these kinds of things where there's discussions about the right and the wrong of the law and what values should inform the laws that we have. And I would say the same thing for immigration.
It does seem that, you know, despite all the discussion and efforts over the years, that we still haven't really, probably the U.S. hasn't invested in maybe in the right things, because I was just mentioned that World Magazine article I referenced that there's a huge backlog of cases, just and maybe that's just because it's been increased beyond what they can, but a backlog of more than 375,000 pending cases. I mean, that's pretty substantial. There aren't enough immigration courts and judges in the country. I mean, sort of dozens only compared to the great needs. So, I mean, are we really, as a nation, really serious about this issue?
Well, I think we don't allow ourselves to get serious about it. To me, serious about it means thinking about if it's a good or a bad system. And the numbers that you're saying just show us just how inadequate the system that we have now is. Let me give you an example. U.S. law is really geared about entry, who can come in and who cannot. But once you're in, U.S. law doesn't really think about what to do with you, except deport you. So they don't track you. So I don't know if you've left. And so what's happened is that we have 11.5-12 million people here already, but the law that we have now doesn't really have anything for them. So what you're seeing is the numbers of backlog courts, the fact that we have nothing that we can really think through for 11.5 million that are already here, just shows you that the system needs to be changed. But there's so much rhetoric out there that won't allow us to get serious about constructive change.
Well, we want to get back to those 50, maybe 60 plus thousand kids, many that are on the border being warehoused. We want to get to that and more as we talk immigration today. The topic is Christians at the Border. That's the title of the book from Danny Carroll. Dr. Daniel Carroll is a professor of Old Testament at the Denver Seminary in Littleton, Colorado. He's also founder of IDEAL. That's a Spanish language training program. And he also is an adjunct professor in Guatemala City. And I'll have to have you explain the title since, you know, my Norwegian Spanish doesn't sound quite as good as yours.
Okay.
And we'll get to that and more in a moment. By the way, if you'd like to join our conversation, we always welcome the interaction. And would love to hear your thoughts on this, or maybe you have some questions for Danny Carroll. You can join us with a call at 877-933-2484. It's 877-933-2484. Or if it's more convenient, you want to drop us a note, you can do that online by going to myfaithradio.com. That's our website. And if you click on the Connecting Faith show page, there's an email link there. It gets right into the studio. We'll be able to get your question or comment taken care of that way as well. Myfaithradio.com and then the Connecting Faith show page. And we'll continue more with Danny Carroll in just a moment as we talk Christians at the Border.
From Affirm Films comes When the Game Stands Tall, inspired by the true story of the longest winning streak in sports history.
12 years, 151 games in a row.
A movie about faith, family, and football.
Don't let a game define who you are. Let the way you live your lives do that.
When the Game Stands Tall, starring Jim Caviezel. In theaters August 22nd. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested. More information is available at standtallresources.com.
Living by faith is a daily decision to put God first. And helping you to grow deeper in your faith walk is what we're all about at Faith Radio. Now, there's a wearable reminder of what's important, one you can take with you all day long. A Faith Radio Live by Faith wristband. And we'd like to send you one completely free of charge. To sign up for yours today, just visit myfaithradio.com and look for Live by Faith. That's myfaithradio.com.
Talking today about immigration, the church, and the Bible. That's the subtitle of the book, Christians at the Border, and written by Danny Carroll. Dr. Carroll is a distinguished professor of Old Testament at Denver Seminary, and he is also an adjunct professor in the Guatemala City. And tell me the name of the seminary there.
Seminario Teológico Centroamericano.
Yeah, that sounded much better than what I could have done with it. So. And you taught there, you say, about 15 years? You lived in Guatemala for a number of years, right?
Right, I did. My children were born in Central America, and we came when they were going to be going into high school, moved back to this country. Yeah, so I have family there and dear friends, and so I try to get back there at least once a year and at least once every other year to teach.
You know, I guess somehow we maybe assume that when it comes to immigration issues, that these what's happening at our borders are all from Mexico, but it's really all of Latin America, isn't it?
Yes, in fact, you know, getting back to the children, when I was talking to some people who are working with a Christian organization that's working with the Guatemalan government about these children. I was told that of those children, for instance, 11,500, or this was in May, are from Guatemala. So Yeah, they come from all over the Americas. Besides Mexico, it'd be Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador would be probably your biggest numbers.
So could we have maybe reduced the the outcome where we are right now with thousands of kids up along the being warehoused if we had maybe sent more aid to Latin American countries? I mean, could we have prevented this from happening?
Well, I think you've kind of hit an important point because the United Nations is telling us there are about 220 million people migrating worldwide. So this is a global issue. It's not just a U.S. issue. It's actually an issue in Latin America where you have people from Paraguay and Bolivia and Peru looking for work in Argentina. I mean, it's just it's a global thing. And what we need to begin to think about then are not just borders, but global economic issues. And so what you're talking about, investing in Guatemalan or Honduranian infrastructures or job creation, yes, because immigration is about jobs, basically, people looking for work. And if there's no work, they don't come. But here there's work, and so they come.
And so, I mean, to Guatemalans that can't find work aren't going to find it in Mexico, right? Because they don't have any more opportunity, I guess, than anyone else, right? So.
Yes, and it's looking for work because there is no work, or the work is so poorly paid that they can't sustain their families. Or what's happened now in Guatemala too? You have a lot of drug laundering, which is another issue. U.S. drug habits are fueling a lot of this, and so you have. You can see it in Guatemala City, new buildings, fancy cars, shopping malls that are clearly drug-related. And so people now are fleeing violence, the drug violence that's come with the laundering.
So maybe just expand on that, right? The money that's being generated by American drug use is what being invested back in Central America, is that right?
Yes, yes. In Guatemala, because it is so close to the U.S., you're only about 2.5 hours out of Dallas by plane, for instance, and 2.5 hours from Miami. It's a very easy place for the drugs to flow, and it's a city of 3.5 million people. So that's what you're seeing. A lot of these drug cartels are investing not only in Mexico, but also in Guatemala and other countries with the money that they get up here.
So I guess to go back to, the question originally, I mean, if we had more Latin American aid, would that have made a difference, do you think? Is that a way that it can be stemmed or turned around?
Yeah, I think so. And it's not only aid against the drug war, so to speak, but it's aid in job creation, infrastructure. And what you're seeing, basically, is that this discussion cannot be handled with kind of talk radio sound bites, which is what usually happens, or 30 seconds on a television, news show. I mean, this is very complicated, and it moves in multiple directions, and so the solution's got to move in multiple directions as well.
So what, as you've, talked with people that have concerns about what's going on in the border, particularly for the kids, what happens to those kids? I mean, give us a little, do they eventually get processed? I mean, if there's this huge backlog, are they just actually sitting in some sort of detention center?
Yes, actually, that's what happens. Because the 2008 law that President Bush passed, they have the right to be processed. The problem is that 2008 law never considered the numbers, right, or didn't contemplate such numbers. And so to be processed properly, that should begin within 72 hours of their arriving at the border and seeking asylum. But we don't have the numbers on the border to handle it, so now you'd start talking about not only where to send them in the meantime, but then how to take care of them in the detention centers. And what we're seeing nationally is that a number of churches and denominations are stepping up and saying, whatever the law might say about where they will end up, let us help take care of them in the meantime. And so I think that's wonderful that the church is at least trying to be compassionate for the kids as they go through the process.
Well, let's talk about how the church maybe traditionally has responded to the bigger picture of immigration. It's one of the part of the subtitle of your book, Immigration, the Church, and the Bible. So let's review maybe what our stance has been or tended to be.
Well, really all over the map. You know, sometimes the responses have been good, sometimes they've been bad. You know, if you want a negative one, at the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century, we had a large influx of Italians and Irish. And because this country at that time was primarily Protestant, there was quotas put on these immigrants because they were Catholic. And so what you saw there was kind of a negative reaction based on religious preference. So sometimes it's been negative, but what we've seen in the last 5 years is that probably every major denomination in the country, both evangelical and mainline, has now come out with a positive statement about immigration and the mandate biblically to take care of immigrants. And I'm happy to talk about that.
Sure.
But you can go on the internet and just look up the Assemblies of God. You can look up the Southern Baptists, Evangelical Covenant Church, different Methodist groups, the Evangelical Anglican churches. All of them now have been making statements for immigration reform.
And is that something, I mean, as you've been teaching over the years, have you seen that as a, as you say, a shift just in the last 5 years, that there suddenly we've become maybe more aware or that this is an area we need to address?
Yes, very much so. I've seen a change. I travel all over the country speaking in all kinds of venues. And I think once you tell people, this is, let me just show you what the Bible says, and let's just don't limit it to the Romans 13, which, you know, kind of aborts any discussion about whether the law is good or bad. But let's just begin to talk about God's concern for migrants. And one thing that I usually do to begin with is, if you go to 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11, you know, the Lord actually uses migration as a metaphor for what it means to be a Christian. I mean, we're all sojourners, right? We're all strangers. So it shows you how central the theme is in the Bible. And once you get people seeing that, my experience has been that they begin to change, or if they actually begin to know some immigrants, that's a whole other thing. And now these immigrants have names and faces. That changes the tone as well.
And I think we've, you know, talked in previous programs and different opportunities to realize that many that are coming, particularly from Latin America, are coming with a faith or certainly a willingness to embrace the Christian faith. Right. So this is really a positive thing for the church worldwide.
Well, what's interesting is that every major denomination in this country's numbers have only remained steady or have grown on the basis of immigrant churches. Here in Denver, we think we have over 200 immigrant churches of various denominations. The one I go to is a member of the Evangelical Free Church. So what you have nationally is that the immigrant numbers are actually helping the church. And, you know, we bemoan the secularization of the U.S., which is what we're seeing all around us. But at the same time, what we're finding is that, ironically, millions are coming from Latin America who have Christian faith or at least a Christian worldview.
We'll talk more about it here in the moments ahead. In fact, we'll get into understanding a bit more of worldview. What does the Bible have to say about immigrants, refugees, and exiles? How do we understand the sojourner and the law from the Old Testament? And then some guidance from the New Testament. You heard Danny Carroll mentioning 1 Peter 2:11, that metaphor about being resident aliens, as it were. So what does that look like for us? What principles do we pull out of that in terms of shaping our understanding of policy, or do we simply just get caught up in the political rancor about it? I'd love to have you join the conversation as well. You can call us at 877-933-2484. It's 877-933-2484. Or again, you want to drop us a note, if that's more convenient, it's myfaithradio.com, and then click on Connecting Faith. The show page, there's an email link there. We'll continue our conversation with Danny Carroll, distinguished professor of Old Testament at Denver Seminary, and author of the book Christians at the Border, Immigration, the Church, and the Bible. Love to have you join the conversation as well as we continue on today on Connecting Faith.
On the next Austin Hill in the Morning.
On Wednesdays, we talk about the intersection of business and faith with our great friend Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com. Also, kids are going back to school, and the bullies are as well. How can we teach our kids to defend themselves? Paul Coughlin is the founder of the Protectors Anti-Bullying Ministry. He'll join us to answer that question.
Start your day connecting faith to life. Weekday mornings at 6 on Faith Radio.
2,500 friends giving a dollar a day and the entire need for fall share is taken care of. I know it sounds easy, and honestly, we believe it's possible. Your ongoing gift of $30 per month is a huge help to Faith Radio and makes possible the relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching that you hear each day. Our fall share begins in just a few days. Can we count on you again this year? Make a difference for Christ and help us reach the upper Midwest for just $30 per month.
All right, 32 past the hour, and talking today about immigration. It's one of the most pressing issues on our national agenda, and thankfully, we have some great insight today from our guest. Danny Carroll is a distinguished professor of Old Testament at Denver Seminary, and he founded IDEA, which is a Spanish language training program. He's also bilingual, grew up in Guatemala, and does some teaching regularly there as an adjunct professor at the El Seminario Teológico.
Teológico.
Teológico. All right. So in Central Americano in Guatemala City. Anyway,
there
he's,
you go.
He's written the book Christians at the Border. That's our reference for our discussion today. By the way, you're welcome to join us. The phone number is 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. As the book subtitle says, Immigration, the Church, and the Bible, and you do spend some time talking about what does the Bible have to say. So what guidance can we get from, I guess, the Old Testament, first of all? Is it something that we can say, well, that was simply just for the culture of the time, or are there some principles that we can pull across to our day?
Well, I think there's a couple things. One is I always try to begin with Genesis 1 and the whole idea of the image of God and the worth of every person and the potential of every person to use the biblical language there to rule and subdue the earth. And so just to show how this can help us with laws, for instance, one of the discussions has been about the Dream Act, you know, the kids who were brought here and have basically grown up here, that's all they know. But if we begin with the idea of the image of God and all the potential that these people have, then the Dream Act becomes the idea of harnessing for the common good all the potential of these children. So now you're beginning to see that the tone and the direction and the purpose of laws that we need to put into place will change from a different starting point. Instead of being the law only being about punishing people, the idea is now how do we channel them for the common good. But in terms of Old Testament law has a lot to say, because migration, well, the history of the world is the history of migration, not only for this country, but every country in the world. So it's not surprising that we have legislation in the Old Testament to deal with people who are coming in. And if we believe that the Bible is the Word of God and that the laws are based on a moral framework, that's where I would see the bridge. A good passage for that is Deuteronomy 4, verses 5 to 8. But there what we see is that the law has a moral fabric or fabric that informs it. And so what I would do is say, well, even though the laws are not going to be the same because we live in a different time and place, the moral foundation of it, continues. And that's how I would deal with the whole issue of Old Testament law and modern application.
And that moral framework has to do with what primarily, what hospitality, right?
Hospitality and recognizing that migrants are vulnerable people. And in the Old Testament, in the ancient world, just like now, they're fleeing war and they're fleeing natural disasters and violence, looking for a living. That's the history of migration. And so what you find in the Old Testament law is they put into place laws that would respond to those needs in their time. So the question now becomes, how do we do that, you know, in the modern day, in a pragmatic but charitable way as well?
And you have some recommendations there. I mean, maybe, you know, compare and contrast. We're not necessarily leaving gleanings in the corner of the fields now, but what would be some practical, 21st century American ways in which we could apply that some of those biblical moral foundations?
That's a great question. And I guess I just preface it with this, because this is part of the rhetoric we hear in this country, that if you do start talking about immigration reform, people say, oh, you're talking about opening the borders, letting everybody in. Well, I work on immigration reform, and no one actually says that. No one actually believes that or advocates for that, though that's the caricature. So if we move to a constructive conversation from Christian principles, the question then would be, if these people are vulnerable in terms of work, and we actually need their labor, the question then would be, what kind of work can we make available, if it is available, so they can survive and feed their families? At the same time, they begin to participate very openly in the society, and they would participate in all, you know, all the issues of taxation and representation, all these kinds of things. So what you find in ancient Israel is not only are there provisions to help them, but the whole idea is to incorporate them into the society so they become functioning and contributing members of the society. And that seems to me kind of common sense, that's what we should be thinking about. It doesn't make it easy. That's the messy part. But I think that becomes the moral imperative.
Which then I guess gets to probably education issues. I mean, you know, learn English then, for example, right? That becomes sort of one of the, it seems like the hallmark of maybe restrictions or discouragement to immigration, right? It has to be, education has to be assimilation, right, as the one of the goals.
Yeah, and that's a messy process. It's always been. For instance, my mother-in-law was the daughter of German immigrants. There's a part of Texas that's kind of German Catholic farming country, you know, Schulenburg, Fredericksburg, Weimar. And she didn't speak English, so she went to school. And her family all spoke German at home. And it's a process. It's usually, if you look at linguistic studies, it usually is about a 2 to 3 generation process. The first generation learns enough of the language to work and to go to the store. It's the children that are in the schools that they grow up with the language. And so the linguistic part itself is a process, and it's always been in this country, whether you were Italian or German. You didn't walk off the boat and all of a sudden walk through some kind of a magical force field and spoke English. It takes time. English is not an easy language.
Yeah. Well, and you've heard my attempts at Spanish, and you know that, so I wouldn't do very well in Guatemala City either, probably. But, well, you know, one of the other areas, I guess, you know, that comes up probably has to do with social services, right? That how do we handle sort of those aspects?
Well, in terms of present U.S. law, undocumented immigrants have recourse to almost no social services. They don't have right to food stamps. Medicare, Medicaid, they have no rights to that because they're not citizens. What they can do, the children can attend school. There was a Supreme Court case in 1982 that allowed them, the children, to go to school. They can go to an emergency room at a hospital and get medical care, but that's basically about it. But that's another common myth, that they're kind of sucking us dry on the social services, when really they have no right to even apply for any of them.
Mentioned common myths. Are there some others that maybe we ought to lay out on the table and deal with?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest one is that if you're pushing for reform, you're saying open borders, and no one is saying that except the people who are against reform. And I would know that because I've been working at it for years, and no one is actually saying that. Everyone knows that you can't do that pragmatically. And I think everyone needs to appreciate the fact that any kind of reform takes years. And so even the Senate bill that was put into or on the table a little over a year ago looked at a 13-year process for someone to become a citizen. So another common myth is reform equals amnesty. On the reform side, no one is talking amnesty. Amnesty is what Reagan did in 86. Everyone's talking about a process that will take years of background checks and language learning and you know, other things. The Senate bill, like I mentioned, was a 13-year process. So, I mean, so that's not amnesty, at least in any dictionary that I know. So if we can get past some of the false ideas and the language that's being thrown out there and move to a constructive conversation, I think that's what we need to do. Another thing that I find is that people just assume because it's U.S. law that it must be good. We don't think about that in terms of other laws that we change all the time. What most people don't realize is that U.S. law is based on a quota system. So, for instance, unskilled labor visas per year are 10,000. I could probably guarantee you, you're in Minneapolis, correct?
Yes, right.
That there are more than 10,000 unskilled labor jobs and unskilled immigrant undocumented people working just in Minneapolis. I mean, what you see is that those quotas that were established many years ago don't work. We need unskilled labor to harvest our fields, to do construction. But the quota is 10,000 a year. So when people say, well, they need to get in line, well, there's no line to get into. You know, we actually need probably about 500,000 unskilled labor coming in every year just to fulfill what we need now. So I think what we need to do is get past the ignorance and get past the kind of easy labeling that we hear on radio and television sometimes, and just sit down and have a constructive conversation.
And I know in your book you reference kind of throughout that it's easy for us to, you know, have the get in the conversations, but not many have it from a biblical worldview. I mean, one couldn't tell if there was any worldview that had formed it other than what they'd, you know, heard on the news.
Well, that's why I wrote the book, actually, because as I got into it, as I began to know and become friends with and go to church with undocumented, in my case, Hispanics, the rhetoric I was hearing from my friends and others who claimed the Christian faith was the same rhetoric I would hear from non-Christians. And then sometimes it was pretty directed at a particular ethnic group, Hispanics. But like, for instance, we think probably about 20% of all Koreans in this country are undocumented. And they come in not across the border. They come in on student visas and tourist visas and just stay. So it's a lot more complicated. I mean, there's issues of race and ethnicity. There's issues of history and biblical ignorance. It all needs to be put on the table. And that's what's complicated.
Yeah. In a moment, we'll take a quick break and come back, talk more with Dr. Daniel Carroll. Danny Carroll has authored the book Christians at the Border, Immigration, the Church, and the Bible. It's the second edition that's been updated, and it's full of practical, usable insight. And we're going to talk a little bit about, we've talked a little bit about Old Testament perspective, some guidance from the Old Testament. Is there some guidance from the New Testament as it relates to immigration? And also want to talk about what does it mean to be an American and get Danny's perspective on that coming up in just a moment here on Connecting Faith.
We'll be right back.
6 past the hour, and we're talking today about what's become a divisive issue, immigration, one of the most pressing concerns in our nation today. And as believers, is there a worldview perspective that can help shape our discussion so that we don't get sort of caught up in the rhetoric that is plentiful? And getting some good perspective from Danny Carroll today. From he's a distinguished professor of Old Testament at Denver Seminary, as well as teaching at in Guatemala City, where he's an adjunct professor there and actually grew up in the Guatemala City. And he has authored the book Christians at the Border, Immigration, the Church, and the Bible. And Danny, we talked a little bit about some Old Testament principles and sort of alluded to a little bit earlier New Testament, but say a word about maybe what the New Testament, how that adds to and builds on what the Old Testament says.
Well, the interesting thing is that even with Jesus, he begins his life as a refugee. He has to flee Herod, and he goes to Egypt and stays there for a time before his family comes back. And so one of the things, as I speak to immigrant churches, is for them to appreciate that Jesus actually has had experiences similar to what they may have had. But I think the issue that you had brought up earlier about hospitality is a consistent theme in both Testaments. And the idea of being compassionate to those in need is a consistent theme across the Testaments. And I think becomes really a marker and a proof of our faith. The other thing that I would say, and this is going back to something I mentioned earlier, there's much more about hospitality in the New Testament, but if we get back to that 1 Peter 2 passage, what I tell people too is this: if migration is a central metaphor for what it means to be a Christian, meaning that we have another king, another set of values, another citizenship, maybe we can actually learn more about those realities and about the Christian faith itself as we understand immigration and migration. Because for most of us who are citizens, it's just a metaphor. It's just an idea. But for those people who have come, it's not only a metaphor, it's something they have lived, what it means to be strange in a strange place. And so, to me, it almost becomes an invitation to the topic of immigration and to the potential of getting to know immigrants based on 1 Peter chapter 2. So those would kind of be how I would start the New Testament discussion. And maybe one last piece about that is what you find in terms of the book of Acts is Paul's church planting strategy throughout the Mediterranean basin is to begin with diaspora Jewish settlements, meaning he goes to these Jewish settlements that are based on Jews who had migrated to different parts of the ancient world, and from there he launches the church planting that he does. And so what you're seeing, it's even embedded in the missionary strategy of the Apostle Paul himself. So there's all kinds of ways you can follow this out in the New Testament.
I want to talk in a moment maybe about what you recommend in terms of ways that we might get to know the immigrant, the stranger among us, and if you have some ideas on that, if you know, language or there are other barriers that might come up. But it occurs to me, just to ask, I don't know if you've studied this in terms of global policies. Is U.S. policy significantly different, or maybe has a different framework compared to what might be happening in, say, you know, Asia or Europe, some of those things?
Yes and no. As I mentioned earlier, it's a global phenomenon. In fact, I was just in England. After I went to Guatemala this summer, I went to England for other reasons. But so I was in England for 2 weeks. I just got back about a week and a half ago. And they're wrestling with immigration. And they're not only dealing with the entry of Muslims coming from Pakistan and India, and this is where the empire that they had actually has come back to bite them in a sense, but a lot of migration out of North Africa. And so England is wrestling, or the UK is wrestling with their own immigration laws. And so because of the massive numbers that we're seeing worldwide, I am seeing the reaction around the world is the same one we're seeing here, where it's a reaction of fear, in its reaction of let's put up barriers, and because people just can't even fathom the new reality that we're seeing. So what we're seeing around the world is the same kind of emotional responses that we see here. And so what you're seeing being put into place around the world is increasing barriers to migration, which is just kind of putting a lid on a time bomb, because you've got 220 million people migrating and now staying in refugee camps or along borders all over the world. In fact, France in England or the UK, as they try to deal with the African migration, it's actually being housed in northern France. And France now is beginning to put pressure on the UK to accept the tens of thousands of Africans that have been bottled up on the French coast. I mean, so this is a common phenomenon. So as the world begins to get entrenched, it could be, just kind of putting our head in the sand and not dealing with the problems that are now inescapable.
Hmm. And you talk about, you worship at a Hispanic church, bilingual, obviously, traveled to Guatemala every year to see family. But so how do we get to know, maybe are there some strategies that we could put in place in terms of understanding more what that that migration metaphor should look like?
Yes, like I mentioned, here in Denver, there's over 200 Hispanic churches, and because of the finances of it all, what they tend to do, and we do the same, is that they tend to rent or use space in Anglo churches, but in the afternoons, because the Anglos are meeting in the morning, and so the churches kind of have nobody in them in the afternoons. And so I would assume that many of your listeners actually have Hispanic churches meeting in their walls in the afternoon. Or, for instance, this Evangelical Free Church I go to here in Denver, it's a pretty good-sized plant. And so on a Sunday afternoon, you've got a Hispanic church, you've got an English-speaking African church, a French-speaking African church, a Filipino church, and a Russian church, all meeting in different parts of the building. So what we need to appreciate is that they're actually in our buildings. That would be one way of getting to know them, just through the very building that they go to worship in. And then, because of the demographics of our school systems now, there'll be a lot of children in that are going to be classmates of if you're an Anglo, of your Anglo or African American children. Or Asian, if you're an American Asian. So they're all around us. And what I have seen is if you get to know people and put a name and a face on it and get to know the children and the parents who are just as hardworking as everyone else, I think that changes the whole tone of the conversation and allows us to see them as an opportunity for ministry instead of some kind of threat.
One of our callers just wanted to know, he said, understand your perspective about, we're not talking about an open border, but that there has to be some sort of cap or something. Have you kind of thought through that? What would be a reasonable approach if you were writing policy, which, I guess we could cast our vote for you here today, maybe. But what sort of things should be included, perhaps, if we're letting the Bible inform our policy as it relates to this issue?
Yeah, I think that's the kind of discussions we need to have. And I would say a couple of things at least. One would be, one of the things that was on the table actually was to try to change the quota system so that it would mirror U.S. market needs, whether it's harvesting in our fields or working on roads or whatever. That to me is a constructive way, so the quota isn't fixed as it has been, but actually will move up and down according to U.S. market needs. So what you're seeing then is a willingness to engage our need as well as the migration need in a practical way, but with a different kind of tone, that we are seeing now. And the other thing that I would say is, again, I've got to encourage people to understand that there are two distinct, though they are related, issues. One issue is how we control or organize the border. The other issue is what we do with those who are already here. And that's the problem sometimes in our discussions. We're focusing on the entry. Well, these people are already in. And so when I hear people say, well, let's fix the border first, really that's putting your head in the sand. You have to do both simultaneously. We need to deal with those who are already here and get them on some kind of path to legal status, even as we begin to organize the border more efficiently. So that's the kind of conversation that I would have with someone like your caller. But that's a very good question, and it's the kind of question that we need to get to.
This question isn't going away, and if we don't deal with it, as you say, there's a push globally as the world really is on the move, and a great opportunity for the church to be there to show hospitality and compassion, regardless of the political situations, right?
Yes, and you know, I would encourage people to read the book, Christians at the Border, but if you just want a quick intro to U.S. immigration, just go to Wikipedia. There's a very good article that's just titled Immigration to the United States. It walks people through the quota systems, the history of immigration into the United States. So at least begin there. Just begin to inform yourself about the secular data, if I can put it that way. And then I would encourage people to consider the book to begin to inform themselves of the biblical perspective as well.
We've been getting that good perspective today, thanks to Danny Carroll, who is a distinguished professor of Old Testament at Denver Seminary. He is also an adjunct professor in Guatemala City and teaches there. He's founded IDEO. It's a Spanish language training program, has written several books, including Amos the Prophet and his Oracles, research in the Book of Amos, and the theory and practice in Old Testament ethics. And the one we're referencing today is called Christians at the Border, Immigration, the Church, and the Bible. It's from Brazos Press. Danny, thank you for taking time to encourage us and challenge us today. We appreciate the opportunity to visit.
Well, my pleasure, and thanks so much.
Danny Carroll joining us today on Connecting Faith. If you missed part of the broadcast, you can always catch it on the podcast. It's available after the show. It's myfaithradio.com. And then click on Connecting Faith for the podcast archive.